The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Some of the early proponents of the free grace position said some things in a way that was confusing. And that's what we'll talk about today on Grace in Focus. We are so glad that you've joined us, friend. And please feel welcome to continue joining us 5 days a week for Grace in Focus. It is the radio broadcast and podcast ministry of the Grace Evangelical Society. Please find out more about us at our website, faithalone.org. There are a lot of resources and articles there that you can look into, and we'd love you to do that, faithalone.org. Now, here with today's question and answer discussion are Bob Wilkin and Ken Yates.
Welcome back to Grace and Focus, and this is Ken, and I'm talking here with Bob Wilkin. And Bob, I think we got an interesting question from Alan. Okay. Or he brings up this point. And the reason I say that is because I get asked this occasionally. And it's the issue, the background of the issue is, what do we think about when we read maybe a pioneer of guys we consider free grace or free grace friendly in the past? And we read some of their stuff and it seems a little fuzzy.
It's less than clear.
Yeah, it's
or
less
maybe even bad.
Yeah, or it might contradict, or it seems like it contradicts. And Alan is talking about the Pilgrim Study Bible. And I'm just going to admit it, I'm not familiar with this. But it was written published in 1952. So Okay. What was that? Over
the
70?
The year I was born, before you were born.
That's right, over 70 years ago. And he mentions that some of the contributing editors, and I think this is important, the editors was a whole team. Lewis Berry Chafer, Frank Gabeline, Harry Ironside.
Right.
And for those who are familiar with Ironside, he wrote a bunch of commentaries. Ironside, for example, on Acts 2:38 is outstanding.
Yeah.
And he mentioned some other ones, Lehman Strauss, Alan McRae, and some others. But there's a note that he finds in here, and he's puzzled by this. This is his words. On a certain page, it says, "Before we can be saved and know God, we must have what is similar to a second birth." And he points out this sounds awful similar to the Calvinist view that we must be born again before we become Christians, or before we must be born again before we can believe. The note says, before we can be saved, we got to be born again.
And what did they go on to say?
Yes.
Something about desire or something?
Yes. And God gives us a new nature, a new life that is like him and wants to please him. Only people who have this new life are really, boy, that sounds like lordship salvation here, really Christians. And so when you read the note, there's a couple things that pop out. The note seems to be saying that you got to be born again before you're saved, which sounds like the Calvinistic teaching that you're regenerated before you believe. And then the second part of that quote seems to be saying you're going to be automatically transformed, that if you're not transformed, if you don't have this desire and you live this new life, then you're not, and this is in the quote, really a Christian.
Yeah, so I would have those two problems. Number one, it does sound like regeneration precedes faith or something similar to it, because it does talk about it's new life. Before you're born again, it's new life, and it's a new nature before you're born again, but what do you call it, before you're really a Christian or before you're really saved?
Well, it says before we could be saved and know God, we must have what is, I don't even know what this means, similar to a second birth.
And it did say new life, right?
Right. Later it says God gives us a new nature, a new life that is like him and wants to please him.
But he gives that to us before we're saved.
Well, it doesn't say.
It's unclear.
Yeah, at most, this is very confusing.
Right. Well, at least.
Right, yeah, at least.
And at most, it's some kind of lordship salvation. But here's the other thing I would suggest to Alan. And you and I were discussing this during the break. We don't know who wrote that note.
Yes, there's a team
of
editors.
Not only are there a team of editors, but there was probably a team of writers beyond that.
Right.
And so Which person wrote that? I mean, something similar happened with the Nelson Study Bible. Earl Rodmacher was the editor of the Nelson Study Bible. And when they got their notes in, some of the notes were mild Lordship Salvation notes. And he didn't like it at all. And if I remember right, in the second edition, he changed some of the notes. But, you know, you would say, well, it's Earl Rodmacher. How could you have notes that weren't consistent with the grace position? Well, he didn't write all the notes. In fact, he wrote very few of the notes.
And in a case like that, you might know, you know this better than I do. In a case like that, okay, you got this team of editors and they write this. Does someone like Earl even have the power to say, well, no, that's not going in? I mean, who makes that decision?
Well, if I remember right, the Nelson Study Bible was Thomas Nelson publication, and I think they had the right. Now, they gave him as the editor all kinds of latitude, and I'm not sure how that worked out. I think in the first draft it got down to a time crunch, and he didn't have time to read everything or to have other people read everything, and so some things got through because of the time crunch.
Well, and I would also think, just on my own experience, that on the time crunch, if you go to somebody and say, I don't like this, the other guy goes, well, I'm not changing it. And, you know, what do you do in a case like that?
I think Earl had the authority to change notes or to drop people as contributors and say, okay, fine, we're just not going to use your notes. But I don't know.
Right.
But I think he probably had that authority. But, you know, it's difficult when you've got hundreds or, in this case, probably tens of thousands of notes.
It's like herding cats.
Yeah, and you can't, any one person's not going to read all of them. So probably what happened is after the first edition came out, people called to Earl's attention, look at this, look at this, look at this. And when they did, he then fixed them. And I think Thomas Nelson gave him the authority to fix those things, and he did. So kudos to Thomas Nelson for that. But, you know, when you publish something, when we publish something with Grace Evangelical Society, we have a lot of time latitude. So we can say, well, like, you know, this book, Doctrine for Disciples, that you and I and Philippe Sterling were supposed to release like a year and a half ago, it still hasn't been released, and we're done with it, but it needs to be edited, and then we need to get it printed, and we just haven't finished it. But part of the reason
And it's a lot smaller, too, than a thing like this, when you've got all these different guys. There's even names on here that I didn't read, and I don't even know some of these people, you know, even their names. So Alan's point is, what's going on here? Well, there's a lot of factors that are going on here.
Did you know that the Grace Evangelical Society offers an MDiv degree through our online seminary? And tuition is free to those who maintain a 3.0 grade average. It is a 3-year degree program, and you can submit your application now to gain acceptance. Then stay apprised of our registration periods for upcoming semester terms. Program and application details can be found at gesseminary.org. Have a look at our MDiv degree. Become an approved workman. Find out how. gesseminary.org.
The other thing that we talked about in the break, Bob, that just my opinion, is when I read some of these guys, you know, this is over 70 years ago, what I find is it's hard to determine how strong they were in free grace, because we've learned, I think, as time goes on, to be very careful with what language, what words we use. Like when we use the word trust, or we use the word repentance, or you know, all these things.
Right.
And they didn't fight the battles that especially you have fought, you know, and like Zane. And I've learned by watching you guys to be very careful, you know, about the words I use, you know. And they didn't go through those battles. And so they weren't as careful, maybe, in some cases.
I think you're right. And, you know, we could ask the question, if some of those people were alive today, would they align with the writings of Zane Hodges? Would they align with the writings of Grace Evangelical Society? Or would they be aligning with flexible free grace people? Or even Lordship Salvation? Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to know, because even the Lordship Salvation, that built over time. I think it was 1955 when Everett Harrison and I can't remember if it was John Stott. I'm not sure, but they had a debate in Eternity Magazine. That might have even been 59.
Well, anyway, it's before this.
It was before this.
Right.
And before.
No, that was after this. This is 52.
Right. 52 is before this.
Right, right.
So my point is, this book wouldn't even have been toward the modern Lordship Salvation discussion.
Right.
Or the modern free grace discussion. I think we live in a different time. Now, having said that, there have been some of the same things that you see in the writings of Zane Hodges are found in the Merrill controversy like 1670. And some of those same things are found in the writings of John Glass or Robert Sandeman.
Right.
And so you see, or for example, John Nelson Darby or C.H. McIntosh. A lot of these people were pretty clear. But when you come to like 1952, whatever clarity was before them doesn't seem as clear then.
Right.
And I think the modern free grace movement, although it's got many antecedents all the way back to the apostles and lots of things, we don't have writings that exist between the, say, 2nd century and the 16th century of people who held to free grace, but there were surely many, many in every generation, but we just don't have the surviving writings. But what we do have now is a robust amount of writings, starting with maybe 1970 and the Hungry Inherit, and then 1982 with the Gospel Under Siege and many other things. And you could argue that there, you know, Dr. Ryrie had a chapter on Lordship Salvation in, what was it, Balancing the Christian Life, I think. And there are a number of other things that have come out in the last, say, 50 years or 60 years, whatever. But it's gotten stronger. And I think I'm pleased that the Lord has chosen to use me and Grace Evangelical Society to help continue the legacy of what Zane Hodges was doing. And he wasn't unique in church history.
No, like I said, one of the things he did, many good things he did, was to get us to be precise and use these words. Because as Alan says, you read this, you're very confused.
What is this saying?
What does this mean?
And we both sat under Zane Hodges, and we both know that as scholars of the Bible go, there are very few that we've met that were as careful and precise as Zane Hodges.
Right.
So we're very blessed to have sat under him.
Right. And so Alan and anybody who's asked any of us this question or similar question, it does teach us to be careful to the way we word things.
That's right.
And that's what we don't find here. So, well, a great question, Alan, and I think very, very relevant.
And it reminds us to keep
grace in focus.
Be our guest and subscribe to our 48-page magazine, 6 issues per year, also called Grace in Focus, by emailing your name and snail mail address to ges@faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On this program, we keep our requests for financial partners to a minimum. But if you are interested in becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus, you can find out how to do that at faithalone.org. On the next episode, how should one start and conduct a home church? Please join us for that. And until then, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.